There's an interesting new book out, Sly and the Family Stone, an oral history written by Joel Selvin, who has covered pop music out in San Francisco since 1970. He's written about 20 books about rock, and he joins us now to talk about this oral history, the new edition of the book. And Joel, good morning to you. Talk about why you decided to focus on Sly, other than the fact that they kind of got going right in your area there.
Great to be back on the show, Bob. And the Sly Stone thing actually was somebody else's idea. Not that I didn't eagerly go, yeah, but it was part of a planned series of oral histories, and they asked me did I want to do this, and I sure did. I remember exactly where I was the first time I heard Dance to the Music. I mean, that band stands out in the history of music so clearly and vividly.
Who was he, and what happened to him? I swear, when I started reading your book, I'm thinking, wait a minute, is he dead or alive? It's kind of a forgotten story, and the memories are not necessarily fond, are they?
No, the book's a little bit of a nightmare, actually. Sly was a Sylvester Stewart, and his family was very devout Kingdom of Jehovah's Witness, and he grew up in this tight little religious circle and got out of college and became a disc jockey and started a band while he was a very popular disc jockey in San Francisco that eventually evolved into this Sly and the Family Stone, and it mixed whites and blacks, boys and girls. It drew from all kinds of different music of the time, the Beatles, Dylan, Lord Buckley. So it was something new under the sun. And by the time he appeared at Woodstock, they had become this messianic, monumental live act, and they tore Woodstock apart, as anybody who saw the movie knows. And at that point, Sly succumbed to the perils of prosperity and moved down to Los Angeles and surrounded himself with gangsters and poured drugs into his system, and ego, drugs, women, money, and it was a downward spiral. The book ends in 75 when the original group broke up, but it, you know, Sly's downward spiral continued for years and years and years and years. And when he was inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1991, he was just out of jail, having been a fugitive from justice for a couple of years.
And didn't he end up homeless?
He's never really been homeless, but he lives in an RV in his lawyer's driveway.
Wow. Unbelievable. And as you point out, he was so influential, Motown, jazz. He really led the way in a lot of areas, didn't he?
Yeah, Motown, Berry Gordy brought the Stand album into his A&R meeting and just explained to everybody that worked for him that this was the future of music. And indeed, the Temptations, you know, Papa Was a Rolling Stones, practically a tribute to Sly and the Family Stone. And Herbie Hancock's album Headhunters, which is the biggest selling album, jazz album of all time, is directly from his experience with Sly. It's his idea of what Sly's music would lead to. Miles Davis used to hang out with Sly and was very influenced by him. I mean, it's just amazing. That guy's musical imagination was so great at one point.
Yeah, I didn't realize that he also produced all sorts of hit records for other people like the Bo Brummels. And it's fascinating that he went from this fame and then he became famous for not showing up at concerts. Certainly here in Chicago, people still talk about that.
Well, of course, course, the Grant Park incident wasn't really his fault, although it was a massive riot. That was a combination of the promoters and the police telling him not to come. But there's no shortage of concerts that Sly didn't show up to of his own volition. Yeah, he was just an amazing combination of ego and talent and drug abuse. I mean, the story about the Dick Cavett show in the book just is it curls your toes, doesn't it?
Yeah, give us the very short version of that, Joel.
You can't even, but you know, it has to do with, you know, missing a flight to get to the Dick Cavett show and having go back to Los Angeles from the East Coast because he's out of drugs, and having to get Bobby Womack to wrangle him and bring him back to the East Coast in time for the show, and he's Cavett sees him on the set and announces him, ladies and gentlemen, Sly and the Family Stone, and he turns and goes to the bathroom, and Cavett just sits there on camera going and it goes on beyond that. But once they got on, they smoked 9 minutes of "Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself." It's one of the strongest performances on TV by anybody. And all this, including the goofy interview he does afterward, is right there on YouTube. Go ahead and dial it up. You won't believe it.
Yeah, people will. And talk about influence. He inspired the name of the TV show Different Strokes, didn't he?
It's just such a great song, you know. What a touch for lyrics that guy had. Different Strokes for Different Folks.
Yeah, it's a really...
And it really captured a sentiment that was so popular at the time. The humanitarianism of that album, which is Stand, it just was so right out of that hippie ethos without being, you know, corny and goofy like the hippies always were.
Right.
He really was something incredible. And then the next album, which was There's a Riot Going On, was as dark and despairing as Stand was humanistic and optimistic.
Sly and the Family Stone and Oral History, Joel Selvin. Joel, how can people get the book?
I would hope that they have a local independent bookseller right down the street. But, of course, you know, there are these rather large internet websites that purvey books.
So I've heard. it's a fascinating story and always good
Thanks,
to talk
Bob.
To you, Joel.
It's good to be in Chicago, even if it's only on the radio.
Well, come visit us in person, will you?
It'd be a pleasure.
Keep the books coming. Thank you very much.